Now we present an encore presentation of Protect Your Assets with David Hollander.
Well, last week, yesterday, closed the books on the first half of 2023. And the headline, well, it was a pretty strong start. The Dow up 2% for the week, year to date up 3.8. Listen to that, Dow up 3.8 for the year. S&P 500 up 2.3% for the week. And that was up 15.9% year to date. NASDAQ up 2.2% for the week. Get this, and this is where the story continues. 31.7% for the year to date. The international index was up slightly, 0.8% for the week, 7.9 year to date. The 10-year treasury holding in solid there at 3.83. We had a little bit of a pop in the bond market as a result of some economic news, but then it settled down a little bit on Friday to close down slightly. Oil, slightly over $70 a barrel. And bonds, well, they're up 2% year to date, but for the week, down 0.3%. So as we closed the first half of the year, people started asking me about Powell, because as you know, Powell and some of the other ECB leaders got together and they had a conference and they were talking about interest rates. And someone asked me, why would the Fed keep raising rates if it looks like inflation is declining? It was a really good question. So thank you, Judy, for asking that. But I want to talk to you about an article that I came across this past week from Ben Bernanke. Remember Ben Bernanke? He wrote an article recently about why the Fed would keep hiking rates, and it made a little bit of sense. So let's talk about what Mr. Bernanke has to say. After all, he's the one who saved us from the financial crisis in 2008. You may remember that, student of the Depression. So most of the inflation spike that we saw, and again, this is Bernanke, not me. Most of the inflation spike that we saw in 21 and 22, think about that, price of real estate locally, increase in groceries, increase in going out to the restaurants. When did that all start? It started in 21, remember? That's when the prices started really ramping up and we just got used to it. According to Mr. Bernanke, it was driven by supply chain problems. Not consumer demand. Really? Okay, well, Mr. Bernanke's paper went on to demonstrate that supply-driven inflation shocks usually reverse over time. Now, I don't know, I'm not, you know, again, I'm an economics person, but it's super boring to me, honestly, and so I try and make this a little bit more understandable. We all know Target, right? We all have shopped at Target. If you think about Target, inventories went way down during the pandemic, right? Because we were all running in there wanting to buy toilet paper. And the supply chain froze, not only because people couldn't go to work, but there was nothing there. So prices did what? Well, when there's no supply, prices go up. Think about the used car market that's now come down. So in response, stores like Target overordered. And as supply chains came back online, because people went back to work and normalized, they were flooded with inventory. Of course, they had more than they needed. This led to discounting. And it's why Target has struggled over the past year. And if you think about it, I just realized this after reading this article. Bed Bath & Beyond. I used to love that store. I'd go shopping there with my daughter. Whenever she'd go back to college, we always would hit that store before she went back to her apartment and help her get with pots and pans or plates or any towels. Where's Bed Bath & Beyond? They're gone. They went out of business because of this. Why does this matter? Well, it matters because supply-driven inflation shocks, which is what we just went through, don't require a substantial Fed response, meaning increased rates. And that's economic speak for the Fed wouldn't need to hike rates too aggressively because of this issue that I'm talking about. So why has the Fed aggressively hiked rates, and why might they continue to do it for longer? Here's the answer. Again, according to Mr. Bernanke's paper, the longer there's a tight labor market, the greater the chance it becomes a constant source of inflation. So getting the labor market back into balance should be the priority of the Fed going forward. And if the current Fed is listening to Mr. Bernanke, which I presume he is, or they are, I'd say, because there's more than one, the Fed has made little progress in returning balance to the labor market. And that's why they could very well raise at least another 50 basis points when it comes to rates. Now, if they get it wrong, what will that mean? Well, it means it's going to be a drop in the stock market. And while this is not entirely negative, the labor market could quickly come into balance in the next few months, and the Fed might not need to hike rates as much as they're talking about, and particularly as he said last week at this meeting. So I don't want you to read this as absolutely negative view of the future, but it does explain why the Fed has been so militant about additional rate hikes, even though we've seen inflation come down. So Judy, I hope that helps understand that. But I also want to point out what has changed since last February. Remember, last February is when we had the market down. Well, I monitor different indexes, as you know, each day, and we talk about it on this segment of the show. And if you go back to February of this year and you write down the yield on the two-year treasury, where was it? Well, it was slightly above 5%. Where did we finish just yesterday? Well, as you know, the 10-year yield closed at 3.83. Ten-year yield was at 4.76. So the 10-year yield is close to, I'm sorry, the two-year yield, I'm getting those mixed up. The two-year yield is close to 5% currently. Now, what's changed since last February, other than the S&P 500 being up, like we talked about at the top of this segment, a little over 15%, almost 16% if you look at it? What's changed? Well, not much. In fact, it's gotten worse from an economic standpoint. If you look at the economy, it's actually deteriorated since February. You've got the 10-2 spread we talk about. 10-year treasury yield is less than the 2-year. It's inverted. Back in February, it was 0.88% negative. Now it's 0.99%, so that's worse. You have 2023 earnings. Back in February, this is forward-looking earnings on stocks, 2.25, same today. How about 2024? $2.40, same today. What about the federal terminal rate? Remember all the discussion about that? Well, back then it was 4.63%. Today it's 5.25%, so that's higher. That's worse. That means that there's going to be a greater break on the economy. The manufacturing index that I care so much about, now it's 46.9%. What was it back in February? 47.7. So again, that's a contracting economy, and that's just getting worse, not better. How about the service index? Back then it was 55.1. It's worse today. It's 50.3. And the jobless claims, that's what I was just talking about, 225,000 as of June 27th was 256,000. So that's worse. So if the economy has deteriorated since February, how is the S&P 500 up more than 10% since February 28th? Well, I'll tell you, the 15% return for the S&P 500 in the first half of 2023 is the fifth best start since, get this, 1990. And in those four better instances, the market recorded an average return for the full year of 33%. Well, it's been focused in technology. Technology has outperformed the index, and the leadership within the S&P has been concentrated in a few mega cap tech stocks, like what? Apple, Microsoft, Tesla, Amazon, Alphabet, also known as Google, Nvidia, and Meta, all gained an average of roughly, get this, 85% in the first 6 months of this year. So what does it mean for us going forward? Well, super cap tech better not flinch, because the reality is the fundamentals for this market haven't improved. Super cap tech has lifted the S&P 500 higher. And so if AI does not turn on to be the profit booster that markets expect, there's absolutely no reason why in the second half the S&P 500 can't pull back 5 to 10%. If there isn't a pullback, well, guess what? Growth on will continue, And I like right now, because it hasn't done really much, industrials, materials, financials, value, and small cap. That's where you want to be, because those could outperform.
Investment advisory services are offered through Liberty Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. The strategies mentioned are not suitable for everyone. The information expressed does not consider your specific situation or objectives and may not be appropriate for all investors. Past performance is not indicative of future results. To better understand the risk associated with investing and how it reacts to different market conditions, listeners should always consult with their qualified investment professionals, financial advisors, legal or tax specialists, and conduct their due diligence before making any financial decisions or taking any action. The legal information provided on the air is not intended to substitute for callers hiring their lawyers to advise them about personal legal matters. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Liberty Group LLC paid for the following program, and the host's views and opinions do not represent those of the station or its ownership. California Life Agent number 048569. Persons engaging the services of one affiliate of Liberty Group LLC companies should be aware that each company is operated separately. You're listening to the Protect Your Assets Radio Network.